Hello, friends. Fire up the blender and put on those Mardi Gras beads. You're listening to Blame It on Buffett.
Well, I sailed from Lauderdale down to Key Largo. Crossed the Gulf on a fast sloop, and I sailed the Abacos. As a kid, I read Contiki, and now all the pirate books, too. There's just so many places on my list to see. I'm going crazy just trying to choose.
Well, welcome to a new episode of Blame It on Buffett. Coming up a little bit later, we're going to have an interview with Brent Burns, so stick around for that. He played at a house concert here in Tucson, which is where apparently I get all my interviews so far. I promise there will be other interviews in other situations coming up sometime soon. But, you know, why not take advantage of it when you have the musicians right there? Gotta talk to them. So look forward to that. I hope everybody had a really great National Margarita Day, drank lots of margaritas. I had one, you know, just the obligatory margarita for National Margarita Day. I feel like it's my duty as someone that has a Jimmy Buffett-related podcast that you have to have a margarita on National Margarita Day. So I did that. Also, Mardi Gras has just passed. I hope everyone had a great time there. Drank lots of hurricanes. Hopefully nobody was in any actual hurricanes. I know those don't really come until later in the season, but I hope everyone had a great time. And I don't know if I'm missing any of the other Parrothead High holidays, but if any happened in the last month, I hope those were fantastic as well. I just wanted to, before we get to the interview, talk a little bit about something that is dear to my heart, and that is books and reading. I love to read. I collect books. I have many, many of them. And lately, I've really been on a tear of reading travel nonfiction, like travel writing, is one of my favorite subjects to read about, especially if it takes place in a tropical clime, or the person is sailing away on a boat, or maybe the French countryside, really whatever. I have a wide range, but lately I've been rereading all of the books that I own in this genre, which I have a really bad memory, so it's kind of nice because every year or two I can just reread the same books over again, and it's like a brand new book practically. Some of my favorites, which I have just reread, are On Mexican Time, Gringos in Paradise, which is also takes place in Mexico, An Embarrassment of Mangoes, which is about a couple that sail to the Caribbean, is such a good one. And then I am currently reading Jimmy Buffett's A Pirate Looks at 50, which I'm sure you Buffett fans out there have read that. I've read it many, many times, but, you know, I just do sort of every couple of years reread it, especially because I'm going to be headed to New Orleans in a couple weeks and just wanting to see if there's any fun New Orleans references in there that I can fit into my trip. If you know of any good Jimmy Buffett-related New Orleans things that I need to hit up. You know, I probably have the obvious ones down, but just in case, feel free to message me those or comment. Or if you just have any New Orleans tips about where you like to go, what you like to do there. I'm going to be there for a work conference and then also staying an extra couple days so I can fit in some fun things to do. So yeah, let me know if you have any thoughts on that, but I just wanted to reach out and see if anybody, because what happens is I kind of reread the books that I have over and over again, and I would like to expand my library, especially in that sort of travel writing, tropical genre. If you have any books that you love, actually, you know, even if it's like fiction, tropical fiction, I'm open to that too. So if you have any books that you really are into, or just that you have been having a great time reading lately, I would love to hear about them. Maybe someday I'll have an episode that's about books, or we could have like a book club episode and I'll have someone on that's read maybe the same book as me. We can talk about it. But yeah, so what are your favorite books to read in that either travel writing that has to do with moving to tropical places or tropical fiction? You can message those to me. You can send me comments. You can email me at blameitonbuffettpodcast@gmail.com. You can leave me a voice message on, if you're going through the Anchor app link to listen to this, there's a message button and you can just record a message right on there and send it to me. So feel free to do that. I can even incorporate it into the podcast. If we get a couple, maybe I'll do a segment on that. So yeah, that's just what I have been up to lately. Here in Arizona, it's starting to warm up. I know that's like a relative term because it hasn't really been that cold, but this winter, even more than previous winters, I've realized that I'm not sure I can really move home or move anywhere that gets super cold in the winter. I feel like it was cold here for 3 days and froze overnight, and I was like, nope, this is too cold. I'm over it. So I'm happy that it's starting to warm back up again, and you know, I'm just doing all of this kind of in the winter mode, which I'm sure this is makes much more sense for people that actually live in wintry places. But during this time of year, I usually get into mode of like wanting to read about tropical places, I end up watching all my, you know, pirate movies and Captain Ron and all the, you know, just all the movies that make me think of sailing off to the Caribbean. I have discovered that the HTV Go app has so many episodes of Caribbean Life, which is like House Hunters, but just in the Caribbean. And I have been watching just only that, basically. All other TV has stopped. Just really, you know, getting into that tropical mindset, escaping winter, what little we have of it here. So I'm sure everybody else, especially in colder places, is doing that too. But things are starting to warm up. It's March now, and looking forward to starting to go to house concerts outside. The last few that I've been to have been inside, despite the first episode where Kelly and I were doing the interview in the hot tub. We didn't actually, the concert wasn't actually outside. And so, yeah, and that's one of the great things about Arizona is we have more of the year that we can really enjoy the music outdoors. Even in the summer when it's pretty hot, you know, you get some shade and some fans and you're good to go. So, speaking of that, we'll now get to the interview with Brent Burns. I was really excited to go to this house concert because, as you'll hear me mention in the, once we get into the interview, I saw him in Key West once, but he hasn't been to play here, basically since I joined the club, which was 10 years ago. So, it was really nice to get, him to come back and play again. Hopefully he'll be able to more, you know, and I'm sure this is true of all places, you sort of get the same musicians that come through, right? Because they have their regular route or they live closer in the area. And so you kind of see the same people over and over again at these house concerts, which I also love because, you know, I consider a lot of those people my friends because I've hung out with them multiple times and just seeing them at all the events. But it's nice when we get, you know, a few new people that we haven't seen before or maybe that don't come as often. So it was really enjoyable to listen to Brent. You know, he has a lot of really fun stories in his songs, a lot of really funny songs. The classic, which is very relevant here in Tucson, is, you know, if a snowbird sees him, why can't we shoot him? And that's a gem that I'm sure like everybody enjoys that song, but in places like Arizona and Florida and places where we actually have a lot of snowbirds, I think it's just a little bit more on point. So, yeah, it was a great time, and he was very wonderful and, you know, agreed to do this interview with me. So thanks, Brent, so much for doing that. And we'll get into the interview right now. All right, welcome back to Blame It on Buffett. I'm here with Brent Burns, who just finished playing an awesome house concert at Russ and Tamara's house. Brent, it's been a while since you've been here in Tucson.
Yes, and I've missed it. I mean, this is a great house concert venue, and Russ and Tamara are just great, and I've missed being back here, but I just gotten busy doing other things.
Life happens.
Life is fast-paced. I'm just trying to keep up, you know?
Yeah, the last time that you were here was actually, I was thinking back, and I'm not sure exactly, but it was one of my first house concerts that really? I ever went to. I joined the club not long before that, so wow. It was Jim Hain and you, I think, were the first two house concerts okay. I saw, and I can't remember which was, like, first.
So you heard me when I came here several years ago, and you actually came back and heard me the second time?
Yes, I was excited.
Most people don't do that.
They're like, oh, that was enough.
Most people hear me one time, and it's pretty much it for a lifetime.
They buy the CD and then never see you again?
Hopefully they buy the CD, and then they listen, and they never can hear me play again, but that's okay.
I'm sure that's not
no,
true.
No, it's true. I get very little repeat business.
Really? Much. I feel like I found that most drop rock artists tend to have a following of people that are like, Brent Burns is like my jam. Like
maybe,
that's,
maybe
you
I
probably
do.
Have like a
yeah,
little following.
A little bit, I guess. Yeah, most of them are, you know, retired and old, but yeah, they like me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I was retired and old because then I could not have to go to work tomorrow.
Well, retired and not old is even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's maybe. Less likely to happen.
You have to work tomorrow?
Yeah.
That sucks, but it's okay.
Yeah, it's what it is, you know.
Job.
I'm still here.
I never had a real job, so I wouldn't know about that. Well, I had a real job when I was like 16.
And what was that?
I can't remember. Oh, yeah. Okay. I did a bunch of things. I was a janitor.
Oh.
This is about 14, 15, 16. I was a janitor. I was a car hop at A&W. And what else did I do?
Did you wear roller skates?
No, I'm not that coordinated.
Oh. That's like what, there were car
yeah,
hops,
they, yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't, what else I did? I can't remember. Flopped hamburgers somewhere, probably. Oh, no, I'll tell you what I did. When I was 16, I got tired of doing manual, those kind of manual labor, so I got a job selling shoes at Christown Mall in Phoenix because I could wear a silk coat and a tie and make a lot more money.
Did you, like, was it like a sales job where you make commission if
yeah,
you sell?
Yeah, it was cool. All my buddies were getting greasy and doing hamburgers at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was out there and I was playing music and rock and roll bands on my nights off, so it was good.
Honestly, sales jobs, I think, seem like the hardest thing. To have to try and get somebody to buy something is like my worst nightmare.
Well, I've always been a bit of a BS artist, so I was pretty good at it.
So just like the music thing and that kind of just went together.
Oh, yeah, they do. I mean, you know, being an entertainer, it's kind of, you know, you gotta be able to tap dance to any song, you know?
Yeah. Well, from what some stuff we were talking about earlier, you also have real estate dealings, and I heard that you owned a racehorse. Is that what Tamara said?
I owned a world championship racehorse. Her name's Groupie Doll. She, 2012 and 13, she was two-time world champion and Eclipse winner, and she won Breeders' Cup 2 years in a row in her class.
Wow, that's
she was a big
not
racehorse.
Something that everybody can
no,
say that
I've
they've
had a,
owned.
I've had an interesting life, and that's just one of the many things I've got to experience, and I don't know how that all happens except for God likes me.
Well, I'm sure getting to travel around a lot, like experiences sort of happen more than when you're just stuck in one place
they
all
do.
The time.
Yeah, they do. Music has got me a lot of places, and I've got to experience a lot in life and meet a lot of wonderful, interesting, sometimes famous, sometimes not famous, but interesting people in my music career. I've traveled the world and got to meet a lot of neat people, really, of all ilks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you start out in the music business?
I wanted to get chicks, and I was 14.
That makes sense.
I was 14, and girls were screaming at Ricky Nelson, and I'd see bands playing at high school, and the girls were around the stage, and I thought, well, I want to do that, because I like girls, so my dad played a guitar, and he played 4 or 5 chords, and I had him teach me that. And then I was off to the races, and I had my first band when I was 14 or 15. Yeah, playing my first paying gig when I was like, I think 14 or 15.
And did you mostly play covers, or were you writing your own music even then?
All covers. Yeah, I didn't start writing. I was kind of a late bloomer as far as writing. I guess I got to Nashville in 1980. I'd written some, but not a lot. And I got there and realized that there was a lot of really good singers, a lot. And that if I wanted to be successful in Nashville, have a chance, I needed to be a writer too. So I really buckled down the writing and got real serious about it. And didn't have the success I wanted, but there was I had a lot of headwinds in Nashville. I was, it's a long story.
how did you transition from that into sort of the quote unquote trop rock world? Well, like, did it just sort of naturally progress?
Yeah. I kind of gave up on Nashville, and I went through a divorce in the early 90s, and I moved back to Gulf Shores where I had property, and started my little life on the beach full time, which I'd been playing the beach for since 72 in Gulf Shores, Alabama, but it was my full-time home now. And I just decided not try to write songs for the jukebox and write hits. I just started to decide I'm going to start writing songs about my life at the beach. And that's my first CD. It was Living the Life Jimmy Buffett Only Wrote About. It was about me and the beach. And I didn't really know there was other guys doing that. I knew about Buffett, of course, but I wasn't really a big Buffett fan. I knew who he was, and we have a lot of mutual friends because that was part of his area. He used to run around down there a lot, and still does some. So, but I just was writing about my life at the beach, and then I found out through a series of events that there's other people doing the same thing in Florida and all over the country. So I just kind of stumbled into it naturally, you know. It's been a great thing.
Yeah. So you started doing house concerts, just like through that.
Yeah, festivals and house concerts, and I transitioned from being a cover band singer to doing original stuff. It was kind of gradual, like I'd do maybe half and half, and then one day I said I'm going to all originals, so that's all I do now. I don't do anybody's cover tunes. So, and I've been doing all my own stuff for probably 15 years now. I don't do any cover tunes.
Well, and you have so many original songs. You don't need the covers to fill in.
But it's hard, you know.
Can't even play all of the songs.
It's a real blessing to be able to play your own tunes, even in clubs. I play occasionally. I even play bars occasionally where I live, just to, you know, just it's something to do. And it's unusual to find someone who plays all original stuff. You know, it's nice to be able to do that and not have to do other people's music. You know?
Yeah, it seems like that has become sort of a trait of the trop rock, like
absolutely.
The guys that go and ladies that go around and play now it really is about like being a singer songwriter, writing your own music, playing your own music. I mean, not that they never do covers.
Yeah.
Like I still love to hear me a Jimmy Buffett cover, you know. I love Jimmy Buffett, but I'm totally happy to hear somebody's original music.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a like pretty strong selling point of the sort of trop rock.
It is to me.
Circle,
I
guess.
I mean, I like other players who do the original stuff because, I mean, I don't sound flippant about this, but anybody can do a Jimmy Buffett tune. But, you know, to craft a well-written song is really important. That people find interesting and telling a story. And songwriting is to me now the way I write it. It's storytelling, and I like to tell a story. And you may not like the story, but as long as you understand, the biggest thing as a writer to write a story that people can understand, whether they like the song, the story or not, but where they know the story, understand it, and are not trying to figure out what's that song about. They know by the way you've written the story what it's about. So.
And a lot of your songs are humorous. Do you start out, like, do you say, like, oh, I want to write a funny song?
No,
or is it just because you're a funny guy?
It's
or?
A natural thing. But I write more some serious stuff. But when I'm doing house concerts like tonight, I mean, people want to hear that they like the funny stuff.
Right.
You never go wrong in a house concert making them laugh.
Yeah. I mean, everybody really just wants to yell, go ugly early tonight.
Sure,
that's really,
yeah.
that's the jam.
That's one of my, you know, top songs. It's been very good to me. But, you know, people... You know, I mean, I can do, as I did a few serious songs tonight, which went over really good, but I'm able to throw them in to a house concert setting because people are listening. So I can throw a serious song in there, which is cool. I like doing that too because I can do it in this venue. But if I'm in a loud room where people aren't listening, I don't want to do a serious song because nobody's listening. It doesn't do anything for me. But in a house concert, I can do a serious song. Especially after a funny song, they'll sit through it, you know.
And, right. Yeah.
And you know they go over big too, but people want to laugh, and you can't go wrong making them laugh. You know?
I mean, it is, you know, a big part of it is just just entertaining people too. You know, aside from just the music, like one of my favorite things about coming to house concerts is getting to hear. I mean, the stories or the music are often stories too, but like getting to hear stories like. Pre the songs, like, oh, this is sort of the setup for this song and the kind of stuff that you don't
Well, I do
hear.
A lot of that. You know, I do a lot of storytelling, joke telling, and I tell, I don't know if you call them jokes or just, I just tell little vignettes about things that have happened to me or, you know, about my life, and people seem to find them amusing.
Somewhat. Yeah. It's funny, the one that you were talking about, the show that you were on.
Mike Douglas show.
Yeah. So this was like quite a while ago, maybe a year or two ago, but Sunny Jim played here. Uh-huh. And sometimes I stay overnight when I don't have work the next day, because I live kind of far on the other side of town, so I don't have to drive home. I'll just stay at Tamara's. And he was here that they played a show. And then it was like me and Russ and Tamara and him, you know, late at night, like we've all been drinking or whatever. And I can't remember what happened.
No, never. Oh my gosh.
And I can't remember how it came up, but Sunny Jim was like, you have to see these videos of Brent. And he was like, brought them up and like played them for us. And he was gleeful about it, is the word that I would use. And we were just like, wait, what are we watching? And he's like, he has an afro. It was great.
And James is one of the, he's a sweetheart of a guy. You know, we do a lot of shows together during the year, and not a lot, but we do a few shows. And in fact, he's going to next 2021. He's going with me on the my Daniel River cruise I'm putting on. Along with Bill White, but it'll be Sonny Jim and me and Bill White. It's going to be a wonderful musical lineup in 2021. But he's a great guy, and he's just fun to work with. Everybody loves the guy.
Yeah, he's super nice.
Yeah, he is. He's a good guy.
I wanted to ask you about the trips, actually, because you have done a lot of those.
Yes.
And it seems to be a thing sort of that's catching on, where musicians will sort of take a group of people under their wing and travel places or like put on shows. But a lot of them are in, you know, like Mexico or Belize, Caribbean, or tropical places, because, you know, we're Jimmy Buffett fans. We like the tropics. But yours are a lot in Europe and just other places that I feel like these trips don't go usually. How do you, is that just because you like those places?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Europe, and I love going to Europe. Before I did my first group trip to Europe, I'd been to Europe many times, and I'd love going to Europe and visiting all the ancient stuff. And so I decided several years ago, let's try a trip, because everybody does these trips to the Caribbean. They always go on a cruise or a destination somewhere in the Caribbean, and that's fine. There's just so many of them, though. I said I'd do something different. So we did Ireland the first year, then we did Scotland, then we did Italy, then we did France. And then we did the Rhine River last year, and this next year we're doing Greece. And the last 2 years we've stopped by Paris on our way to our trip.
And I do a little stop in Paris.
Stop by Paris, and I play it. We go see Jimmy Buffett. We line it up against the week he plays at. We go see Jimmy the last 2 years. This will be our third year to see Jimmy. And then I do a gig with whoever's traveling with me, songwriter-wise. We'll do a show at a place called the La Javelle. And several other players that are in Paris come visit. We kind of have a jam session there. We had like a couple hundred parrot heads there on the La Javelle. It's an outdoor venue. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Oh, there's so many good trips to go on. I just am like, okay, how many vacation days do I have? Like, how many pennies?
Yeah.
I'm saving up slowly someday. Yeah. Hopefully they'll still be happening.
Well, I didn't travel Europe until I was in my 50s. I did my first trip to England and then Italy. I actually was played in Italy right after 9/11. I was actually, here I'm bragging again, but I was the first entertainer in Europe after 9/11. To play for USO.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, everybody else had canceled, and I had been booked to go over there, so that's kind of a feather in my hat. I'm always proud to say that, because it was a month after 9/11, and Europe was quiet.
Oh,
people
sure
were not traveling over there. They were scared to go over there, and I said, what the heck? Me and my son went over there, and I played some gigs for our troops over in Italy, and we had a wonderful time. The Italian people were so embracing during that period right after 9/11, and I got to see the Pope, and we went on a tour of Rome in this big red bus, and it was me, my son, the driver, and the tour guide. There was nobody. Nobody was in Rome. I'm surprised they didn't cancel the tour. They did, and they took us, me and my son, a bus driver and a tour guide, and me and my son on this big red bus.
I mean, I guess it's somebody to do the thing that they do.
I think it was their way of defiance, of saying, we're going to do this. We're not going to stop living. But it was a wonderful tour, and we got to see the Vatican and see the Pope. He came through for an audience with some of the first responders, and it was a wonderful trip. One of my first trip, it was the third or fourth trip to Europe, and I think my second trip to Italy. But maybe it was my first trip to Italy. Yeah, it was my first trip to Italy. And just, I loved Italy. I love France. I like all of Europe. It's fun.
I've been to a number of places around the world, but I've never been to any of Europe. So that's definitely on my to-do list of places to go.
We all have European roots. You know, I can't think of any Americans, hardly any Americans, don't have roots there. Yeah. I mean.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm basically like a little bit of all of the countries in Europe.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
That's my makeup.
Mine too. I'm like German, French, English, Scottish, Irish. Who knows what else?
So like the trips that you take with people, like you mentioned the part when you stop in Paris and have a show. Do you sort of have multiple shows along the trip? Yes. Or is it more just like you're going on a tour with people? Like what could people expect if they go on a trip?
We bring our guitars, me and at least one of the songwriters.
And it's a different songwriter each time?
I bring different people. And then we'll stop at a motel after a tour. You know, we'll do a tour, a daytime tour. And then we'll go maybe in a hotel lobby. We may go in a little meeting room. We might find a bar down the street. Sometimes it's set up ahead, for us ahead of time. Sometimes it's just spontaneous. Like we were in a bar in Scotland one night, and we asked them if they could play in this little area they had. It was kind of their dining room. There was nobody in there in the dining room. So we got in there with our guitars and started playing. Our people came in, about 30 of them, and we were playing, and the owners were in the bar side, and they were peeking their heads out and laughing at the jokes. And the next thing I know, they came all out with shots of whiskey for all of Scotch for us all, not Scottish whiskey, Scotch for everybody, a shot of Scotch for everybody. And they said, you want to come back tomorrow night? You know? And so they were just, couldn't have been nicer. They just thought we were pretty, pretty clever. And it's just, we run into all kinds of nice people.
Yeah. Seems like kind of such, I'm sure that they hadn't seen something like that before. Like it seems like such a unique way to travel around a group. Like, I mean, not that there's plenty of like tour groups, but to then have sort of, you know, one or two musicians then leading and just stopping to play music.
Most tour groups are a combination of people from all over, don't even know each other on a tour.
Right.
And our tour bus, everybody knows each other. Or at least if they will at the end of the tour, they all know my music.
Right. They have a common interest.
And a lot of them, after all these trips, have gone on every trip. So they all have connected with people on Facebook. So they have a relationship with these people outside, after the trips. So a lot of them talk. I see them on Facebook chatting back and forth. So it's a real camaraderie that's built up these trips. And it's a lot of fun, man.
Yeah. I was going to say, is it a lot of repeat, like a lot of the same people?
A lot of the same people.
And is that sort of a group that just does that? Or do you see those same people at like house concerts?
Oh, yeah,
at
they
Parrot
do.
Head
it's
stuff?
People who,
or?
It's people who just have enough money to travel. I've seen them at house concerts, and they come to Gulf Shores, and I just, you know, I'm going to San Diego in 2 days to do a show for Kevin and Tish Diston at the Casa Tortuga house concert, and they were on the Rhine River cruise, and they've been on trips, and they're just, you know, just a lot of really nice people.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how nice they are. And everybody, you know, nobody talks politics. It's all about enjoying the fact that they can afford to travel and have a wonderful time, you know.
Yeah, one of the things I love about this community is that it's really easy to meet people. I'm not the best at meeting people, so it's really easy because if you're at an event like this...
I find that hard to believe.
That's what everybody says, but I promise that I have really bad anxiety about meeting new people, talking to people I don't know.
It's kind of like me saying I'm shy. Okay, it's just kind of like me saying.
No, I swear. like this is okay because like I know Tamara and stuff. But going to events is hard.
If you put me in a room full of strangers, I'm kind of shy too. If I don't know anybody.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to take that first step. Once I know people, or once I have sort of like that avenue of introduction, then it's fine. But it's hard to take. For me, some people are great at just being like, hello, stranger. Like, hello, person sitting next to me on the plane. Let me talk to you about whatever. But I definitely, it's like that first step of like, oh, I don't know you. Like, I don't know anyone. Like, I don't, like, how do we make small talk in this situation? Yeah. But that's one of the great things about this is going to like house concerts, Parrot events, Trap Rock stuff. Everybody, you already have something in common with all those people and something to talk about. And it's just really easy to like meet people and make friends. Like you see someone at one event and then like your best friends, and like the next time you see them at another event, even though it's a year later, you know what I mean? They're still like, oh, hey, like I think I met Mike Nash on the first SOB festival they did. And then I saw him once at like in passing at Meeting of the Minds the year before last. And then this house concert that he just did this year, which I did the episode before this, was that interview. You know, it was like, it was just like, we were like real good friends. Yeah. And I, you know, basically met him like one time before.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
But I just find that that's how people are in this group. And
well,
it's really
the great
welcoming.
Thing about the Parrothead, the great thing about the Parrothead world is this, that there's no initiation fee. You don't have to be attractive. You don't have to be tall, short, educated. You don't have to be bright or smart. There's no criteria. You can just if you like to have fun and socialize people, there's no criteria, and it lends itself to people of all ilks that come in and want somewhere to belong and enjoy themselves. And you know, there, you know what I'm saying, there are certain clubs and organizations that you have to meet certain criteria. You have to be a member of the right social circle. You have to be right. And it's not true of the Spirithead world. It's very wide open to anybody who wants to have a good time and enjoy, hopefully, music.
Right.
And you know, hopefully.
That is a big part of it. Well, so
it is,
if you don't like music, then.
Yeah, but I think it is a part of it.
Yeah.
And
even if you don't even listen to Jimmy Buffett that much or don't care about Jimmy Buffett that much, music itself with other musicians now has become such a big part
of
it.
It's kind of the fabric of the thing is the music,
yeah,
I think
so too.
Yeah. And the escapism of the beach songs.
Yeah. Everybody kind of is there for that same vibe.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Some of us actually live at the beach. You know?
Yeah, well, that's great for you, isn't it? Some of us live...
No, I moved
There's
off.
There's no ocean anywhere. It's very depressing.
I live at the beach, but I live off the beach. I decided to get away from the water because of hurricanes, but but I still have property down there. So.
But you used to live here in Arizona.
I did. I came here when I was 10 years old from Oklahoma to Phoenix, and my father moved his practice here, and I lived here till I was 30, you know, and, you know, it's my second home, which is my first home, really, in a lot of ways. So I still have a lot of family here, and having lunch with my brothers tomorrow in Phoenix. And
that's nice.
So, yeah, and I have a lot of friends still here. I went to high school here, so a lot of friends here in Phoenix, so in Arizona, so, yeah.
How do you, so when you're traveling to do shows and stuff, how do you decide where to go? Because you haven't been here in a long time, but I would think like this might be a natural place to come if you have family.
It used to be when my parents were still living, I was here a lot because I was helping take care of them a little bit. But so I still have a son in Phoenix, so I need to get back to see them more often. But it's just hard, the traveling. Flying has got to be a real hassle. It's got to be very expensive too, so it's a little harder to travel.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of musicians will just drive to all the places, which also seems so grueling.
It is grueling, and I'm just too old for that. I'm just, you guys could go out and they spend 2 or 3 weeks out. I go out and spend 3 or 4 or 5 days, and I'm wanting to go home.
Yeah,
home to my crib. I have a great lifestyle on the beach. You know, it's not like I live in some godforsaken cold place, but I live in a beautiful spot. I love my spot. I love my favorite happy hour place, and I just like being home, you know.
Do you often play shows in the northern areas?
In the summertime, I do.
But not in the winter?
Oh, heck no.
I was going to say, like, do you find that people in the north are almost more into it because they're like, yes, we need this to get away from what we're...
It's kind of escape music.
We're here, we're just like, yeah, it's like... Yeah. 70 degrees out right now, or
exactly.
Whatever. So
yeah, well, I play Iowa and Michigan and Minnesota. I've never played Michigan in the wintertime. You know why?
Because it's really cold.
No, because there's not enough money to get me there in the wintertime.
You're like, yes, it'll be quadruple my normal fee.
It'll
Thank
be
you.
More than that. They wouldn't have enough money to get me up there. But in the summertime, it's beautiful up in those places. You know, it's really nice. So
yeah,
that's when I go up.
Yeah, I'm from Oregon, so
yeah,
it's so nice there in the summer. But
oh yeah.
It doesn't get as cold as like some
no.
of like the more eastern states, no. but it definitely gets cold and snow and everything. Mm-hmm. And this winter, and I'm always like, oh, maybe I'd like to move back to Oregon. Like it is beautiful there. And
yeah.
And then this winter here, it was like 50 degrees for 3 days in a row and like froze one night. And I was just like, oh, this is the worst.
Yeah.
And then I was like, maybe I shouldn't move back to Oregon yet. Like I'm not ready for
Oregon
it.
Oregon has great Pinot Noirs though. They really do.
Yeah, we do have where I went to undergrad is like right in the valley, like close to a ton of wineries. And now my college was just like a really small private college, but they have a whole wine program.
Really?
Yeah. Like in extensive, they have like a wine archive. They have like a whole wine making, like course, like, or, you know, really? Track in at the college and stuff. It's a pretty big deal up there.
I never met an Oregon Pinot Noir I did not like, ever.
Yeah.
It's always good.
I do love me some Pinot Noir. Yeah, yeah. what are you drinking right now?
I don't know. It's
just
red.
Wine. It's red. It is red in color.
It's red and I've got a nice buzz. Yeah. I've got a nice warm glow going.
That's
you know?
All you need.
That's right.
So speaking of Jimmy Buffett, because yes, that's
I've heard of him.
Always the thing,
I've
right?
I've heard of him, yeah.
I heard you have met him. You've met the man. Right. So would you like to relay your story?
Well, it was year before last, I was going to Paris to, you know, bring my group over there and going to see him one night. And I got a call from one of his people or an email that Mr. Buffett wants to meet you. When you get to the show, and I'm sure I...
So he wanted to meet you.
Well, I mean...
So you're a pretty big deal.
No. I didn't mean that. That sounded wrong. Okay, that's how they phrased it, but want you to come backstage. But I'm sure that Lucy Buffett, who I worked for many years, I'm sure she arranged this.
All right, because you play at her restaurant.
You're right. I played her for many years, and we're friends, and and I didn't ask, but... You know, she'd heard I was going over there, and I'm sure she arranged it, which is really nice. Where I didn't ask her, but I'm sure that's who set it up.
Right.
But his people called my people. Yeah. I only have one people. I have a person that works for me because I don't like detail stuff, so I let somebody do that stuff.
That's good.
And they don't work for me; they work with me. But you know, they emailed in, so you know he was very gracious. You know. This is my first time to see him in Paris, so we had a nice conversation. He was running late, so it's just a true story. We were chatting, and you know, I introduced myself, and he knew who I was because we have a lot of mutual friends in Gulf Shores, and of course worked for his sister for 15 years. So you know, he said, "I know who you are," and we talked about some mutual friends we had in Nashville, just chatted about how great the performance area was there, and I just said, you know, I know you're a you got to do a show to do. I don't want to keep you. You know, I didn't want to be that guy that hung around.
Right. Yeah.
They had to ask you to leave. Yeah. You know, so I was trying to excuse myself earlier than later, and he said, "Don't you want to get a picture with me?" It's a true story. Because I mean, I did, but I didn't want
to
ask.
You didn't want to be like that person.
I want to be that touristy kind of person. And I said, "That'd be great." And then
he knows everybody wants a picture of them.
He said, "Charles, you know, Charles is like Carlton is just like." I guess Charles is the main guy. He said, "Take a picture of Brent and I." And so he did. I gave him my camera, took a couple pictures, and it was very nice of him. He was very cordial. Couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah, he seems. I mean, it's one
human.
Of those things. Is like sometimes when you think you really like someone, right? You're afraid to meet them because like don't meet your heroes or whatever. But like everything, or you find out things about people that you think you really respect, right? That maybe you're like, well, that seems like
he's human. I mean, and you know, people overwhelm him. So I'm sure sometimes, and you know, I get times when I get a certain amount of accolades toward me. You know, at certain you know paired head functions, and people kind of come at me a little bit, and I get a little bit of taste of it, and I realize how awful it must be for times for people like him
I'm sure
to be in public.
Really?
Because
hard.
People do not, you know, I've been lucky enough to hang out or meet several people of note through my years. And one story, it's like I'm name dropping here. But I was,
please, that's the whole point of this podcast.
Well,
drop
I was playing
names.
For Pat James in Birmingham many years ago, and Pat coached at Alabama, and all the Alabama players. Sports catchers came into Pat James' place when I was there for the Alabama Auburn game, and Joe Namath was there. And you know, I met the Bear when I was working for Pat, and Joe Namath was there. And we were talking. He was talking about autographs. He doesn't sign any autographs while he's eating. I said, "Well, why is that?" And Namath told me he had some mashed potatoes go into his mouth and a fork one time, and a lady literally grabbed his arm and said, "Sign this." He's like eating, and he said, at that point, I said, "Never again." So you can imagine what it's like to be a Joe Namath or a Jimmy Buffett.
People are so disrespectful about that, you know.
And they see somebody, and like the famous thing, that this is their one chance to get one-on-one with them, you know? And so and they just cannot resist the need. I did a show with Linda Davis, who you may probably don't know. She's a three-time Grammy Award winner, but pretty well-known person and national stuff. I did a show with her in Gulf Shores, and She came in to hear me play the next day. We did a show together. I was playing just an afternoon bar gig, and her husband came in, and she came in to hear me play, you know, hear me and play some respects, you know, show me some love. And she couldn't listen to me because everybody was dominating her the whole time, chatting her up. I mean, the whole time she could not get away from someone just talking to her. I mean, I saw that and I'm going, man, that's just, that would be tough to be actually famous, you know, really
yeah,
famous.
Yeah, no,
it would be across the bear.
I know? Definitely would err on the side. Like my husband and I go to San Diego Comic-Con mm-hmm. every year, which is in San Diego. It's like a really big convention. Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of famous people there. And yeah. they're just like walking around because,
yeah.
you know, it just takes over all of downtown San Diego. And you yeah. just see famous people on the street.
Yeah.
And there's been very few times when I've even like tried to approach somebody yeah. because yeah. I just am overly worried about like, I don't want to
invading
disturb them.
Space,
yeah. yeah. Like I'm sure. And especially in that situation, they're probably getting it on all sides. So there's only sure. been a couple times it was like when somebody was just like waiting in the hotel lobby, they clearly weren't going anywhere
yeah.
right then. They weren't, you know, they were just like waiting for something and nobody yeah. was talking to them. And I was like, hey, you know,
yeah.
but generally speaking, I'm more inclined to just
yeah.
not even try and approach somebody, even if it's someone that I
well,
really
it's
like.
About, it's about the approach to how you approach them. You know, like someone comes up to you and is really, you know, respectful to you. You know, you want to be nice back, you know.
Yeah.
But some people are just kind of aggressive, you know.
So aggressive.
It's just like, you know, just I get it.
Yeah. You and know? Especially if someone's eating or
oh, yeah.
anything like that. Just,
they're
like if they're
family,
living their
they're
life.
Family
yeah.
and trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just. There's a price to pay for fame, man. I don't think I'd like it too much because you can't go out to eat with your family. Well, you know, Elvis, you know, my buddy Bobby Weinstein, who is in the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Hung out in Memphis for many years and got invited to a late night thing with Elvis. He ran a whole movie theater.
Oh, wow.
Because he couldn't go to movies. So he'd rent a whole movie and invite his friends to watch a movie at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And because he couldn't go out and eat and go to a movie with, so he'd rent the whole movie theater and invite a few friends to go. So, you know, it's just the price of fame.
I mean, it makes sense why Jimmy Buffett spends so much time, like, in the Caribbean or, you know, just places where maybe there aren't as many people
exactly.
around that might.
And he spends a lot of time, he speaks very good French. He speaks fluent French. And I think he spends a lot of time in Paris.
Yeah, it seems like that's
and
one
in
of
Europe. And, of course, in Paris, he can walk down the streets most, except for Buffett Week when he's there.
Right.
But he can go to Paris most of the time and not be bothered. And if he was in Paris... some of the time of the year when he wasn't playing there, he might bump into an American that knows who he is, but it wouldn't be often. So he would probably be more willing to be engaging.
Yeah.
If he, you know, hadn't been hit on 50 times that week, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'm sure it's a lot easier when it's only like once every now
yeah,
and then.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Well, I was just wondering if you have any advice for someone that wants to do what you do. Like if somebody, I'm hoping that more and more people will continue to
right.
sort of find this. I mean, I know there's a lot of singer-songwriters out there, but we'll find this, our little like neck of the woods.
People let me die off.
No,
you mean.
No. I mean, it's just, we want more people.
You want younger blood, don't you? You want younger blood.
I just don't want to be the only one in the Parrot Head Club when I'm like 65.
advice. Oh, well, find your own path and write your own songs. Follow your heart. But well, no, I tell you what, write what you know and remember it's the music business. And don't forget it's a business, also music. If you forget it's a business, you won't be in music very long.
Okay, that's good advice. I just wanted to mention one more thing. Which is another very Parrothead thing to do. You do a lot of charity work, right? With the, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I like to give back, and it's important for me, just for a lot of reasons, you know, because this is the way I'm built. My love learned from my parents, but I give a lot to my church, but I also give to other charities too, because, you know, I've lived a charmed life, and I like to give back, And I learned the thrill and the joy of giving from my parents. So
that's good. Yeah. I think that's a pretty big part of, especially like the club, you know, mm-hmm. what we do.
Oh, absolutely.
The club.
And, it's one of the things I was drawn to, the fact that they do raise money for charity, and it's a really worthy, worthwhile thing, and important to give back. There's always a lot of need.
Yeah, and it does seem like a lot of the musicians do that as well.
Yes.
So it's kind of nice.
Absolutely.
You know, even though it's not like a club thing or whatever, it's just a lot of people in that position to be able to do that.
Right.
Like, they're not just singing the songs, they're also helping contribute to,
right.
that stuff. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's important to give back. And you know, again, I learned the joy of giving from my parents. They were real generous people, and it's fun. I mean, I enjoy giving my money away. It's
yeah.
fun.
All right. That's good. So we can wrap it up. But before we go, do you have, you already talked about the trip a little bit, but do you have anything you want to plug, upcoming events, things that people, where they can find you, see
they can
you?
Just send me money.
Great. No. Also send me money.
Yeah. No.
I'll add my PayPal to the show notes.
No, just come to one of my shows. Go to BrentBurns.com and come to one of my shows and have fun.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And hopefully we'll get you back here not another 8 to 9 years in the future.
I need to wait, not wait so long.
Or maybe just I'll see you at Meeting of the Minds.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
That too.
We can do that. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Brent Burns. You know, he has a lot of fun stories. I wish I had been just recording when we were talking earlier, actually. So the interview was after the show, but when we were just chatting before the show with Tamara, and because there's just a lot of fun stories that he has, and just he has done a lot of things in his life. And I think that's true of a lot of these musicians. You know, they're doing this now as their sort of, you know, regular gig, but the places that they've been, you know, the things that they've done, it's just so fascinating to hear all the stories about what they've accomplished in their life, you know, what they've been up to. And you know, that's true, I think, for these guys just as much as Jimmy. I mean, maybe, you know, they don't have quite the money to take them places. You know, I don't think house concerts pay quite as much as, like, giant arenas. But just listening to all of Brent's stories, you know, and then I'm also reading Jimmy's book right now. It's just have led such an interesting and colorful life. And I think that's something that, in addition to the, you know, escapism aspect of Jimmy's music and these other guys' music, and wanting to, you know, sail off to the tropics or drink margaritas at the beach or whatever it is, a big part of it is just getting to have adventures, you know, and living a life that isn't just going to your job 9 to 5 every day without, I mean, not that that's bad, obviously you need to do that usually to be able to do other fun things, but really to, when you can, to get out there and take the opportunities that come, to really see the world and have as many experiences as possible. I know that's one of my goals, is to just like take as, if I can, obviously I can't always afford it or take the time off work, but to really grab hold of experiences that I can and explore. And so that's why I'm excited to take a couple extra days after this conference, in New Orleans. I mean, they're paying for me to fly down there, so it's a really good opportunity. So I'm really looking forward to that. And my next episode will be hopefully, I can't make any promises because it hasn't happened yet, but I'm staying in a hotel that used to be more of a boarding house, back in the day. And Jimmy Buffett actually used to live there. He mentions it not by the name of the hotel, but it's on the same street that he mentions in, his book, Pirate Looks at 50, that I'm reading right now. And, there's actually even a specific room was the room that he stayed in. I don't think I'm necessarily going to be in that room, but I am staying in the same hotel. So I'm hoping that I might be able to get an interview, with one of the people that work there, and hopefully maybe just, doing some podcasting about, my experiences there and the things that I get to do. So once again, if you have any thoughts on things you would recommend, or specifically things related to Jimmy Buffett, that I can see or do in New Orleans, please, please let me know. You can leave comments on any of my social media, or send me messages on the social media. I'm at Blame Buffett Pod on Instagram and Twitter, and you can look up Blame It on Buffett Podcast on Facebook and follow me there. Please follow me, like, and whatever, do all those things if this is something that you are enjoying. I really like to hear feedback, and I haven't heard a lot yet, so hopefully you're out there listening to this and you will let me know what you thought. So yeah, leave me comments. Like I said earlier, you can also email me at blameitonbuffettpodcast@gmail.com. Go check out Brent Burns, check out all the stuff. You can go to his Brent Burns website, and he has all the information on there. Like he said, he's going to have those upcoming trips, which sound amazing. Hopefully someday I'll get to do one of those. You can look into those and all the information. So yeah, I hope you had a nice time here today, and please tune in next time. Until then, you know, just get out there and live it up.
Blame it on Buffett. He was my hero from way in the past. And I sang his songs and had island dreams before I ever read the man up a mask. Blame it on Buffett. We took the road less traveled upon. And though he beat me there, well, I'm enjoying the journey.